Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod, where we talk to all the interesting people of the San Luis Valley. Joining us in our studio on the south side of Alamosa is George Dingfelder, police chief for the city of Alamosa. He's also brought along Captain Brandon Birch, two-time state runner-up in wrestling. But the police captain for Alamosa PD had to get that wrestling in there because, you know, I love sports. I love wrestling. Captain Birch, you were telling me about your career wrestling for Gary Ramstetter back in the day, and you still wrestle.
Yeah, I try to stay competitive. Just anything I can to stay in shape, I guess.
Right on, right on. Chief, it's good to see you. It's the end of 2025. This is our last episode of 2025. Thanks for joining us.
Of course, Chris, anytime.
I'm over here stuffing my face with bizcochitos.
Same here.
As we are. I mean, you know, it's that time of year.
They were good.
Give us a sense of crime stats for 2025. Let's just start there. Let's start with the year 2025, what that was for Alamosa PD.
Yeah, I feel like we've had a pretty successful year. At the first of the year, actually about this time last year, Captain Mestis had left and taken the chief of police job over at Adams State. So I had an opening for captain over our support services, which is our investigations, our code enforcement, stuff like that. And we had a competitive process, and Brandon came out on top, and so we promoted him to oversee our code enforcement, our investigations. But Brandon has a really strong background in investigations and doing those type of work, so promoted Brandon. And one of the goals we had for 2025, or going into 2012, and we'll talk about that when we go into 2026, some of our goals for 2026. But we had a goal of reducing what we call the violent crime. We do all of our reporting to NIBRS, which is through the FBI, National Incident-Based Reporting System. So there's like part one crimes, part two crimes, which are just like lower levels. But the part one crimes are the violent crimes. So we had a goal of reducing that by 10% in the city for 2025. And as of today, we're down 28% overall. Nice. So that's homicides, sex assaults, robberies, and aggravated assaults. And we've had a really good year. And a lot of that really has to do with some of it has to do with the investigations that we've done. Our patrol officers as well have really stepped up, and we're more focused on, you know, targeting the and going after the areas that we know that are really our problem areas, drugs, guns, and stuff like that.
Is that still the top of the list when you look at crime in Alamosa? Fentanyl always gets mentioned as a problem and what that leads to when you're dealing with that. What are the top one or two offenses that you deal with?
So I would always go back to the drug trade. I mean, I grew up here. I feel like the drug addiction and just the spread of drug distribution has always been one of the biggest problems, which again has its own effects on property crime and everything else that goes on in the city, unfortunately. But
yeah, we were just talking to Alamosa County Commissioner Lori Lasky about some of this, because they're seeing, at least on the opioid front, some reductions there, but they also mentioned, you know, that fentanyl continues to be a source of problems, and it's laced in, sounds like, almost everything you see out there.
Yeah, and I actually recently just heard her talk in a Boys and Girls Club meeting we were just at, but carfentanil is one of the big ones that the Metro is talking about. It's so dangerous. It's way more potent than the actual fentanyl substance itself, so I'm sure eventually that's going to start trickling down here into the valley, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a one that you, as a police department, you can't do a whole lot of other than respond, react.
Yeah, other than like our investigations, Brandon and his detectives have this year had some really significant drug seizures and drug investigations that they've done. That most recent one, would we get 20 some guns and several thousands and thousands of pills and
9 pounds of fentanyl. This is our biggest fentanyl bust in APD history.
Wow. Well, probably in the valley, because I mean 9 pounds. I mean, you kind of do the math on that. I mean, you're figuring, what, 60,000 pills. To put that in perspective, that's one pill that potentially could kill every single person in the San Luis Valley and half the dogs.
Wow.
You know, so you're talking 60,000 pills, and that's a lot of fentanyl. But they did a lot of work on that and was able to make some pretty good seizures on that.
Is it still a frustration or still a case? I know we talked about this a little bit, and I've heard this from others too. Still a frustration, still the case that you make these busts, but it doesn't seem like the offenders stay in, that they're able somehow to bail out. And I don't know, honestly, don't pay that much close attention to this. I'm going to be honest with you, but I do hear that continues to be a frustration. You make a bust, how long are they in for, are they able to, and then they're back on the street. I don't know if that's
I'll let Brandon speak to that, but then I'll tell you the in my opinion what the bigger issue of that is. But yeah. Go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah,
so I mean, if you would ask me this a couple of years ago under the Alonzo Payne administration, then I would have 100% said it was a huge issue. I mean, gotcha. I think I did 30 drug raids, residential drug raids within the city of Alamosa within a year. And I can't count on one hand how many of them actually did any prison time.
Interesting.
Now under this new administration with Ann Kelly, it's totally different. She reaches out to us. She keeps us in the loop on what's going on. If there are plea offers, why are there plea offers?
So that sounds like that's at least getting addressed at the DA's level in terms of what you can or can't do to keep people in.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'll tell you in... The bigger issue is our legislation overall at the state level, right? I mean, they've some of these that used to be higher level crimes, they've reduced, as well as the bond schedules, and that they've changed the bonding in this state. It's crazy. I mean, I always talk about this one because I never thought and I've been in law enforcement 37 years, that you would ever see a day that somebody arrested and charged with first degree murder could bond out of jail.
Right.
And you can bond out of jail on first degree murder, which is premeditated murder in the state of Colorado. And that's because of our legislators have just, they've done a horrible job with a lot of the crime bills across the entire state. And I know through the Chiefs of Police Association, we talk about this all the time, that, and they just keep making it worse and worse and worse. And so the drug crimes, I mean, they've basically said, you know, and I think we all agree, right? Somebody who has an addiction, jail's not the place for them. That's not the place. We need to find them the resources, like through our co-responders and stuff like that, to get them the help they need. The drug distributors, we need to hold them a lot more accountable, but we're not holding them accountable.
Let me ask, because that brings up something that I want to add. Let's frame a question here, because 2026, you're going to have a governor's race. You're going to have a new governor coming in to Colorado. We have a November 2026 election for the governor. If we had those candidates in front of us now, and we're going to get them in front of us at some point, we're going to be able to ask this question. What would be the question to a candidate for governor to address this, whether it's sentencing, whether it's bond, whether it's fentanyl, whatever that is? What would be a good question, a succinct question, that we could ask a candidate for governor around this topic?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this, because I think you're right, we're going to get the opportunity. And I suspect that, especially the Democratic Party, it's going to be Phil Weiser, who I'm very close with because I'm on the post board with A.G. Weiser. But I will tell you, my question would be is, what are you going to do to address the fentanyl issue, and what are we going to do to hold the drug dealers and the drug distribution a lot more accountable? Because it's Brandon's guys will and our officers will make arrest after arrest, and it's in and out, in and out, in and out, and it's the bond, it's the sentencing, and it's everything. I mean, they tie the district attorney's hands on doing this, so they have got to get a lot tougher on crime, especially the drugs and the fentanyl.
Interesting. Captain Birch, what would be a question from your brain on this?
So mine's a little more sentimental, I guess, but yeah. I would say, have you actually talked to a family, somebody that's experienced substance use or death of fentanyl. I think that's a big thing. It's one thing to push all these laws and talk like you understand, but I mean, there's organizations all over the state of Colorado that specifically for juveniles that have died from fentanyl overdoses, there's families that go across the state, and I mean, they speak at all these conferences I go to, and it's crazy to hear these stories that these families that have gone through. I mean, we're talking 13, 14-year-old kids dying from fentanyl.
Yeah.
And it's happening across the state, so yeah, that's what I would want to know is, have you actually talked to anybody?
We're going to jot both of those down, because we do think we'll get an opportunity to ask the candidates for governor different questions. I'm going to bring that one back to them in 2026. I want to ask Captain Birch, because, you know, we just met, learn a little bit about him before we came on. But I have to say, Chief, that the fact that you have Captain Birch, who was born and raised in this town, went to the schools here, knows people, and he's a young person. To me, that's like a really positive thing, to have homegrown law enforcement, particularly in the administrative ranks of the Alamosa Police Department. I just think that in itself is a big win for the community, for the police department, to have someone like him.
I'll tell you, for me, I've been given a lot of great opportunities over my career, from time I went in the military, State Patrol. And for me, when you're making these promotions and stuff, one, that is important to have somebody who's local and stuff. But it's also, you know, when you get that opportunity to evaluate people and see the talent and the drive and stuff. And I'll tell you, nobody works harder than Brandon, and his level of competence in handling complex investigation and stuff. But again, I agree. And then I always feel that's my job, is to mentor people to be in that next position, to be competitive, to be the next chief of police of Alamosa. Because at some point I'm going to have to actually hang this career up. I mean, I love law enforcement, but 37 years I've been doing it. At some point, I'm going to have to hang it up here.
Well, we've met, in addition to Captain Birch, we've met others that you have brought in here, and they all seem to be, well, they seem to be homegrown. They seem to want to stay in this community, and they seem to want to protect and look after this community. And I just think that's a good thing for Alamosa, to have a Captain Birch in your force.
Yeah, absolutely. Him, Captain Spengler, same. They, yeah. both those guys grew up here in Alamosa, went to school here, educated and everything here. So, yeah.
What's been the toughest thing for you in your adjustment to Captain, and then what you see on a daily basis? What's been that tough, what in that growth period for you?
So clearly, like you said, I'm younger. I think my biggest thing I've been dealing with, and you know, I talk to the chief about this all the time, but I need to distance myself from the actual criminal investigations work and focus on being an administrator as well. So I try to level it. it's hard for me, but I still have so much passion and drive for criminal investigations. And what's nice about this position, though, is I still get to have that influence and still get to work those cases. It's just hard when you're a detective and
yeah, you want to be on the streets all the time. And give us a sense for Alamosa. Give us a sense from your perspective, Captain Birch. Give us a sense of that, of crime here. We talked a little bit about fentanyl. We've talked a little bit about crime stats being down overall. But take us inside a little bit as someone who's from here, and just give us some perspective.
Yeah, so, I mean, Alamosa is just one of those places. We have a lot of amazing families, a lot of homegrown families here. The issues and the crime that's always been prevalent when I was growing up here has always been a direct route of drugs. I'll go back to that every time. I feel like if we were ever able to get a good grip on that and actually have some type of control over the drug problem, I think we could really help out a lot of families in this community. It doesn't help that there's a lot of low income stuff going on here as well. That doesn't help the situation, but
yeah, that's the same with me. And you know, I grew up here too, and it's the same thing through the decades. That's been the one thing, is addictions or drugs or whatever. And that seems to just cause whatever problems we have. Yep. And I don't know any solutions to that, but I am glad that you have people like Captain Birch on your team.
Yeah. I have nothing but praise for the work that he's done. I just look at like some of these really complex investigations that we've done in the past. We would have to almost farm those out to CBI or someone like that. But the Henry Krell one, right? The shooting at the Sunset. Brandon did that pretty much. Obviously he had all the support in the background, but he did that investigation, took the jury. First degree murder, right? And took the jury 20 minutes. So that's in testament to his abilities as a detective. And then just recently, two weeks ago, well, we got a conviction on the shooting just right over, a few blocks over from here, right? Mm-hmm. And that was in May. And same thing, that was his leadership and Detective Glass just doing an amazing job on that. And then the district attorney's office, I think that's been the last year or so. We got to give kudos to Ann Kelly and her group, because she's been pretty aggressive in going after some of these violent criminals.
You know, you've been chief now since 18 months, May of 2024, so a year and a half going into your second year. Give us some sense, Chief, of Alamosa PD and how it compares to police departments, its size around Colorado when it comes to staffing, when it comes to caseload. Give us just some sense there.
Yeah, I think overall, overall, I'll say, city council has been very, very supportive of us. City manager has been very supportive of us. And we, of course, all of us, right, we want more people. We're always like, we need more people, we need more people. But really, at the end of the day, when you see, it's kind of hard to go argue for a whole bunch more officers when you've got your crime rate down 29%. But a lot of that is also just being strategic. That's us being strategic to make sure that we're using our resources the way we should be using them, instead of just throwing more resources at it. Sometimes it really comes down to strategy of being more the way you deploy your resources, and then using technology. We're really starting to focus a lot more over the last year on technology and using statistics as far as like, this is the crimes in the areas and stuff like that. And we're going to do more of that in 2026, like focus on, if we know that there's whether it's a traffic problem or a theft problem or whatever, the drug investigations. We have a couple of detectives that are really good at drug investigations, and we get these tips, and they're really, really working on that. So it's just strategy and being strategic in the way that we use our resources. But again, at the end of the day, every one of us are like, oh yeah, give me resources. But again, sometimes you can throw all the resources at a problem. And really at the end of the day, it's just using those resources properly, the ones that you have.
We hear a lot about artificial intelligence. We heard a lot about it in 2025. We're going to hear a lot about it more in 2026. And I wonder, is AI a tool that is getting deployed, can be deployed within police operations?
So that's interesting. We've talked about some investigations without going into details with some of the investigations and stuff. Brandon, Captain Spangler, and myself recently attended the International Association of Chiefs of Police, which is the largest organization, law enforcement organization in the world. And just by chance, the convention was in Denver in October, and there was a huge discussion. These are chiefs and sheriffs, or chiefs from across the entire world. And there was a ton of conversation about using AI and stuff like that, which is great because it's really good for analyzing the data and giving you places to go. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to that. You got to have the human there to follow up on that. And so I don't know how much. There's a couple cases we just won't go into, but I know we've kind of talked about throwing a couple of cases, some long-term cases that we've had, into AI and see what it tells us.
We saw a recent case, at the federal level with the alleged bomber during the national political convention, and the detective who stayed on that for a period of years using technology to be able to figure out that particular case. And I do wonder what that future is like, Captain, when we think of large language models, how you can deploy them, how can you train them. And I don't know if any of that's in the future for Alamosa PD, other than getting into specific cases, which we're not going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd be silly not to try it. It's something that we definitely have to implement. Some of these cases that we're talking about, they're cases that have had past detectives and for history, just scratching their heads on.
For someone like you, what's the learning curve of being able to use technology in some of these areas? Because I have to imagine that, like anyone, you have to also learn how to use the tools or how to feed it what data so that it comes what you're trying to get out of it.
Yeah, I think because, I mean, my detectives will ask to use it all day long if they could. I think the biggest thing is vetting it and making sure that it's something safe, a safe platform. There's a lot of personal information for our citizens that would be put into something like that, and that's what I worry about.
The other thing I wonder about when it comes to police work and it comes to the future, because we're seeing it a lot, and that's facial recognition technology. We do that a lot right now, right, with our facial recognition and signing into our phone. We know there's a lot of cameras, a lot of technology out there that captures faces. We know that that is really, I think, a tool that police use. And I wonder about technology and how police work evolves here.
Yeah, I think, well, I'll tell you, for us, we will always make sure that we're within the laws and the Constitution, and that we're not violating anybody's rights when it comes to use of that. And there's some pretty strict rules on that kind of stuff. You know, we do have some LPRs here in the city, some license plate readers. And I know there's some people who are like, hey, are you using this for immigration? Are you using it for this? Are you using it for that? No, all those license plate readers, if Brandon and his guys are looking for a specific car, we can go back and search that. We're like we got a partial plate, like 123. They can go in and say, and then it's going to pull up every car that went by it that said 123. But it doesn't give us facial recognition, any of that stuff. And we're also, we're tied in with State Patrol through the use of these license plate readers. And we're very strict here in Colorado on our sharing of data, like with ICE and stuff like that. I mean, we can't, first off, we are not enforcement officers. I just want to, this is a good opportunity to go into that, because I know there's been a lot of people worried about, like, what are you guys going to do with, like, ICE? Well, first off, we're not immigration officers, so we can't enforce immigration laws. And second of all, we can't share that data with ICE and stuff. Now, if it's a criminal investigation or something like that, but just strictly for immigration enforcement, yeah, we're not. But again, back to your original question or point here, the technology is there. And in fact, Brandon and his guys use some pretty advanced technology already and some programs that we use. And I would say there's probably hardly ever a criminal case anymore that we don't. I mean, we've had this prolific graffiti artist all over the city all weekend, and he's been all over, but and we use cameras, Ring doorbell cameras. People are sending us Ring doorbell cameras as well as surveillance cameras on their houses. And just right before we walked out, Brandon's like, I think we identified our suspect. That's technology.
Yep.
Yeah, right. No, that's everything. And I think that's something that people are always mindful of. And I want to, since you brought it up, I want to ask you really quick about ICE, about immigration. And the reason only because we saw in the summer of 2025 an arrest on 6th Street here in Alamosa. That, you know, just went crazy nationally because of how that arrest went down with the tactic of smash and grab, you know, which is a tactic police use, smash and grab. And I just want to ask you, Chief, did you have any reaction or did you have anything you did post arrest in that situation? Did you review that? How do you have to deal with something like that as the local police department?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, obviously, they already knew our stance. You know,
we
right?
had you in here and you had talked about, we were clear of what Alamosa Police, how you function in this area.
Correct. So just looking at that, I mean, obviously, we do a lot of training with tactics and stuff like that. We're kind of more the slow things down and try and talk people out versus just rushing up and knocking in windows or kicking in doors. I mean, like our SWAT team, they and even our patrol officers, we're very deliberate in our tactics, because I mean, if we can resolve something without any kind of use of force, that's always our ultimate goal, is to slow it down, take our time. I mean, there's times when we don't, you know, we're not the ones that get to dictate that, but if we're in a conversation with people and stuff, I will tell you, I did see the video, and I also took a lot of phone calls and emails from literally across the world. I had a guy from New Zealand emailing me, telling us how horrible we were. And I made it clear to him that he probably needs to do better research, because it clearly was not Alamosa Police Department, that it was us. So, and then he apologized. But yeah, I mean, that's just not something.
That type of situation that people see, I think it undercuts your work. At the end of the day, I think it just creates this mistrust, and they blanket law enforcement like they do everything all in one group, right? And you see a federal action like that, a federal immigration action like that, and all that does is just put a black eye on everyone and everything, probably.
Yep. I would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, I will tell you, it's definitely not the way that we would operate. And I do find it interesting that the uniforms say police on them rather than Fed or something like that. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, but you're right. We all get, and again, I kind of took a beating from that, phone calls and emails for that. And I'm like, clearly was not us, nor did we didn't even know about it until it was over.
Yeah, I bet you did. Hey, we're going to keep talking to Alamosa Police Chief George Dingfelder, Captain Brandon Birch, when we come back. This is the Valley Pod.
It's been a tough year for many folks in Monta Vista. As the holidays approach, a lot of us are feeling tired or anxious, but good things are still happening all around us. This year alone, the Lohr Foundation has partnered with your friends and neighbors to bring more than 75 community-driven projects to life, making things a little brighter here at home. Lohr Fund's ideas, designed and led by Monta Vista locals of all ages, no nonprofit experience required. Whether it's helping neighbors save time or money, supporting families, or creating something that brings people together, your ideas can make a real impact. All it takes to get started is a simple conversation. And once your idea is approved, most projects receive funding within 30 days. So let's close out the year stronger together. Visit lohrfoundation.org or email yvette@lohrfoundation.org to learn more.
Hey, we're back. This is the Valley Pod. We're talking to Alamosa Police Chief George Dingfelder. We're talking to Captain Brandon Birch. Crashes in Alamosa, traffic enforcement. How much of that is part of your focus or what you're thinking as you move ahead, Chief?
Well, I'll tell you, first and foremost, everything that we do is, whether it's drug investigations or theft or whatever, everything that we do is always focused primarily on public safety and making this a safer and better community. I think we've done a great job so far. We have a long ways to go. But crashes is the one thing. You know my history, Chris. I'd spent 25 years with State Patrol doing nothing but traffic. And I was a little bit amazed at how many crashes we get in this city.
Really?
It's kind of frustrating, honestly. You know, we're 300 to 400 crashes a year in the city. Wow. And I think back to my days when I was a sergeant and captain with State Patrol, overseeing the whole six counties of the Valley. I don't know that we covered that many crashes in all six counties. You know, obviously we didn't cover the ones in Alamosa and stuff, but on the county roads and the highways and stuff, I don't know that we covered that many crashes.
Well, when you're doing that many, that's a time sucker on your staff.
It is very much a time sucker. And one of the things that we still are doing, but we're going to go away from, is private property crashes. First and foremost, the state does not require private property crashes to be reported necessarily on an accident report and sent to the state. So every time a crash occurs on a public roadway, we have to report that to the state. And so a crash report is done, and then we send that into the state. Mostly our CSOs, our community service officers, and then the officers but we go to private property crashes. I'll use Walmart, Safeway, City Mark, and any of them. Me and you are backing out. We back into each other. We can just exchange information and then give that information to our insurance companies because, again, it's not a mandated report. But what we are going to do, we're going to do away with doing the actual report. We're still going to respond to those. We're going to make sure that there's nobody, that nobody's been drinking, because there are some criteria, even if it occurs on private property. For example, if there's anybody's injured, then we're still going to do reports because that's mandated that we report it. If there's no impairment, or if somebody's impaired, we're still going to show up at these private property crashes, but we're just going to give everybody an exchange of information form. Let them exchange information. We're going to check for impairment, make sure there's no injuries and insurance. And then that's really all we're going to do. And then they can report it either online, and we're going to do some PSAs on that coming up here probably this week and next week to let everybody know as of January 1st, we're going to do away with investigating private property crashes. But along that line, we have taken a look. We're not there yet, but you're seeing this speed enforcement, these photo radar cameras and stuff like that. We're researching those right now to decide if we're going to do that, to take it back before council and see if we did have a work session with council on this. And they basically give us the blessing to go forward and to look at it. So we're going to look at that. We've done a couple of traffic studies. We did one on 6th Street. I'll use that as an example in that 25 zone there. 7 days, we were like 1,200 people that were 10 miles an hour or more over the speed limit. I think the fastest that it captured was like 80.
Wow.
In that 25 zone.
Really? Someone's moving 80 down 6th Street through Alamosis.
At 3 o'clock in the morning. So,
wow.
So these photo radars will capture them and send a ticket. And then if they're 25 or more over, then obviously we'll go out and do it. But yeah, I've been... we've done a lot to try and crashes actually are down like 4% overall this year, but we still have a long ways to go with traffic. We have one intersection that keeps coming up constantly, and that's First in Victoria, right there by the bowling alley and stuff. That keeps coming up. So I know Harry Reynolds and Public Works is working on a solution to that, to try and, because we get a lot of crashes there, and we know that we get a lot of crashes there.
Well, I don't know that intersection you're talking to, because then that takes you onto Market Street, I think. I'm not sure the city of Alamosa ever intended Market Street to be that pass-through street that it's become, because you get a lot of traffic through there.
Yeah, and then, CDOT just... They just completed, or there's still discussions going on the access control plan for the west part. Well, all of that. So I know there's a lot of discussions, but there's things that the city's doing, and then we're going to do to try and address some of these traffic issues.
You know, as I see, we've talked about this with Heather Sanchez, the city manager, and Harry Reynolds recently. As you see Alamosa growing along that Craft Avenue corridor and 10th Street and that whole part of town, is there anything you have to do as that neighborhood emerges there, as that anything in that area? That's what I'm curious about, because that is a growing area of Alamosa, and we see another housing development coming in there right off
Craft. Yeah, on Craft. We just finished a traffic study there. I haven't looked at the data on that yet, but that's one of the areas that we're looking at. We know that once you get past Town and Country there and then new housing, people really tend to pick up speed as they head down.
But
I think there's nothing off the table, I'll tell you, when it comes to traffic.
Interesting. Called you coach because I'm thinking
you talk about the Avalanche.
I'm thinking of the Avalanche.
There you go.
Because Chief Dinkfelder is a big Avalanche fan, and we're talking about that 26-2-7. By the way, the Avs,
yes, they are
first in the Central Division.
We always have
to get some sports in here.
And spanked Minnesota yesterday, which is even better.
What I was going to say though, when we were talking to City Manager Sanchez, we were talking about the upcoming Alamosa comprehensive planning strategy. And one of the things she noted was the anticipation that public safety will rise as, you know, what the community wants to address as its top priority. And I wonder if loitering, homelessness, which she brought up, which we see, is that something that you address, have to address, or where do you see that particular topic when you're looking at Alamosa Main Street and you see that happening?
Well, I'll talk a little bit, but then I'll let Brandon talk about what they've done, because he oversees the co-responders and the code enforcement, and they've done a ton of work with the homeless and stuff. But I think overall, again, I'm not necessarily always about throwing extra resources, a lot more resources, because you can have, I mean, of course, we all want more people, or we want more whatever, equipment and stuff like that. But a lot of times we have to balance the city has a budget, right? I mean, there's a lot of competing interests. There's streets, there's water, there's sewer, there's all that, along with public safety. But I will tell you overall, I think that we're pretty well funded. We're well supported. And we just got to make sure that we're using all of our resources appropriately. And as Alamosa grows, absolutely, that's a discussion down the road that we're going to have to look at more people.
Yeah, I appreciate you noting that, and appreciate you talking about, yeah, we can always use more people, but we're probably doing okay with what we have. When you think of the year ahead, Captain Birch, 2026, what's on your plate in terms of your focus, your priorities within your division?
So I'm excited for 2026. So I was shorthanded on a code enforcement officer for about 3 or 4 months. We were trying to get somebody hired. Slim pickings, unfortunately, but we were able to get a new guy hired, and he just got off the training program last week, and I think he's going to be a good asset to the community. With that, within that time period when I only had the two CSOs, I was able to break down some of their statistics. On average, they're handling about 185 calls a month between the two of them. And I think I broke it down to 10 calls a day. And then they're spending about 4 hours a day out of a 10-hour shift working with the homeless. So if you put that into perspective, and then I split it three ways, it's going to give those guys a little bit more time to work, focus on the homeless stuff. With Chief's plan with the private property accidents, that's going to be a huge asset. It's going to give these guys a lot more time to focus on notice of violations, St. Benedict's, and then just all the walking trails and stuff that we get calls on for the homeless as well.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, another busy year, Chief, in 2026. There's a lot on the table. We talked a little bit about the governor's race coming up, but there's going to be a lot more, I would imagine, in 2026 that'll keep us all busy.
Yep, including an avalanche parade.
Including an avalanche. Hey.
In Alamosa?
We hope.
In Alamosa. If
yes.
The avalanche win, we're
yeah. If they are, I'm going to start my own parade.
No, I appreciate that. You know, we're going to shut it down for, this is our last episode of 2025. Want to thank Owen Woods for all the work he does with us. Owen, you got anything for the police chief or for Captain Birch? He pays much closer attention than I when it comes to law enforcement. I wonder, Owen, if you have anything you want to note before we close down the year 2025.
Nothing too crazy. I was just curious on Molly Heaney, just to see if she was doing all right. That was my only question for you guys.
Yeah, no, Molly's doing great. still on administrative leave. CBI's got to finish their investigation, and I think they're almost done, and then it'll go to Ann Kelly, but Molly's doing great. Molly's just a solid, solid officer. She's just, can't say enough about her.
Yeah, and she's a huge asset to our department. She always has been, always will be.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for her.
Yep, very much so.
Yeah, again, I really want to thank you for bringing in Captain Birch, because we hadn't met, and I find it useful and helpful, and I gain a lot of confidence when I meet the people that are keeping us safe, and I appreciate all the work that you do, Captain Birch, and that you're from here and that you look after. I really appreciate that. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. You too.
Hey, we're going to wrap this up for 2025. We'll be back in 2026. We'll have the chief back in 2026. Hopefully, we'll have Captain Birch back. We're going to keep tabs of the San Luis Valley and Alamosa. You've been listening to the Valley Pod. Valley Pod is produced by Owen Woods.
Want to wish you a happy new year. Happy new year, Chief. Happy
you
new
too.
Year,
Captain Chris. Merry Christmas and happy new year.
We'll see you all around. See you around the valley.
Hi, I'm Marty Jones, host of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. Join us every other Wednesday as we talk to outdoor enthusiasts, wildlife experts, recreationists, lovers of the outdoors, and people who spend their days and their lives outside. On the Outdoor Citizen, we talk all things outside and outdoors, provide you with the latest data and measurements for water and weather, give you upcoming outdoor events, and keep you up to date on the latest news. The Outdoor Citizen is brought to you by the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, enjoy the out of doors.